Review Aleph on page 52 and 11 on page 53. Now, we managed to go pretty far last week and the week before especially, and I was able to explain to you the reasoning behind what the Yehoshua Hashem was telling us in the division of the body from the soul at the time of death, and why it was necessary for the body to go through a process of decomposition and disintegration into the earth as being the only way of purification, and I explained that to you according to the laws of Tum and Tavo. Now, that is a basis, and I can't go over that again, and that is absolutely essential for you to understand for what is going to follow now. Now, I've got to explain just a few things to you. Every living creature, but one especially, has got three needs. The first is need. The first is food. The second is clothing. And the third is shelter. Animals have these needs, and man has these needs. There is an intrinsic difference between the way the needs of animals are fulfilled and the way the needs of man are fulfilled. When God created the animals, He created the animal that he is able instinctively to acquire his food, to have covering, and he doesn't need any clothing. So, there is a question of finding food. Animals have their way of finding food. You will find instinctively that they find food. We have, on our grounds, we have a large number of squirrels. Now, these squirrels find their food. I don't know from where they get their food, but they're always cutting nuts and eating something. They find it, and then during the summer, they bury it, and then when winter comes, they find it again, and they've got enough to eat. They're very clever at it. The lion and the lioness are skillful hunters. It is fascinating to see a lion making the kill. And the way it is done is the female goes against the wind. You know how an aeroplane lands and an aeroplane takes off. It's always against the wind. The female stands against the wind. So the wind is in the direction of the prey towards her, not from her to the prey. So the prey cannot smell. So there the female is lurking. Then the lion, when that is ready, then he goes and he puts himself in a position where the prey can smell. He's with the wind. The prey smells the lion, and what does the prey do? What does the buck do? It runs away from the lion into the very claws of the lioness. And then she catches him, and then the lion comes along and helps her in the kill. Now, it's all worked out. So the lion and the lioness they've got the skill of hunting. But all this is instinctive. So we see that these have got ways of finding their food, highly skillful, but it's all instinctive. When it comes to a case of having shelter, the beaver is a wonderful builder. But the beaver builds by instinct. The bee makes the honeycomb. It's a
perfect piece of work. Does that all that he does instinctively and very easily. When it comes to spinning and weaving, look at a wonderful spinner the spider is. A wonderful spinner. And everything that we need food, we need clothing, we need shelter. We find that the animal spirit in the animal world, we find all of this, that it is instinctive. Now, when it comes to the human being, there it works altogether differently. Now, when it comes to the first man, how was he to find his food? That's going to be altogether different. How was he to find his food? How was he to find shelter? What did he to do? So we find that in the question of, first of all, when God created man, he created human beings, he created him what he needed from the moment of birth. What that creature needed from the moment of birth. When he created man, also gave him what he needed from the moment of birth. One of the most wonderful things about life is that as soon as a child is born, it is able to suck. Now, from where does it know that? It does it instinctively. If it didn't know how to suck, it wouldn't be able to live. But it's able to suck from its mother's breast. So that he's got to have immediately. Everything else, that comes with time. But that he's got to have straight away. When God created the first man, food was available. He was placed in the Garden of Eden. He didn't need any shelter. It was a completely regular and temperate climate. The changes in climate came only later. A completely regular and temperate climate. Never hot, never cold. Wasn't any need of food to protect him from the hot and the cold. No reason for shelter. There was never any change. Rain? In the Garden of Eden, it didn't rain. It was watered by these four rivers. No need for rain. So shelter wasn't needed. Everything was there for the human being. That is how it was from the time of creation. Now, there's another great difference. This again is man before he sinned. Now, you must realize what it would have meant if man had at the very beginning to do the things that he had to do afterwards. Man hasn't got these faculties instinctively. So if it was a question that he had to eat bread, just look how long it would take him to find out all this. He would have to find out by experience what grain was. And then when he found out, he'd have to plow the ground, have to sow, have to reap, and after he'd have to reap, he'd have to grind, to mill, to bake. Clothing, just look what he would have to do. He'd have to spin, to weave, and after he's learned to spin and to weave, to sew, and for that you need a needle, and for that you need iron, and you've got to be able to take the iron off the ground, but you've got to melt the iron. Fire, you've got to have the fuel for the fire. Just look what it all means. So when God created man, from the moment of creation, man before the sin had all this ready for him. And he was placed, the Garden of Eden, he was placed in the Garden of Eden. And everything was there. Food was there. Shelter he didn't need. Never rained. It was watered by the gardens. It only rained outside. In the gardens there was nothing there. No need for it. So he had clothing he didn't need. No change in the weather. Didn't need any shelter. Food was all there. Now, but there was given in man all those properties that were to be found in every animal, and this is a rule, that every quality that is to be found in any animal is also there in man. In some people it may be to a greater degree, in some people to a lesser degree. In some people a particular quality may be there to a greater degree and another quality to a lesser degree. In a certain person it can be exactly the reverse. And so you find people that are very adept at engineering. And engineering, it also breaks down. There are those who are very adept at architecture. It's a quality that a bee has. There are those who are very adept at actually building. It's a quality that the beaver has. There is spinning. All those qualities which we find in animals are found in the human being. To some degree or other. It may be latent, it may be dormant, but it is all there. Now, what Hashem gave to man also was, and we've spoken about the soul, and we've spoken how the soul is made up of the intellectual, and just life itself, and the emotional. You remember the Derech Hashem made it that it was really the life and the intellectual, and then the third one, he says, of which we are hardly conscious, and that is the ability of the soul to purify the body. And we say that he really means four, life itself and the intellectual, and he says in between that comes the emotional. So we've got the biological function of the soul, we've got intellect, we've got emotions, and then finally we've got that great power that it is able to be the zachar, it is able to purify the body. Now, Hashem gave, when it comes to intellectual, it breaks down. In there is the purely intellectual, which is one aspect of it, purely intellectual. Now comes a very interesting additional faculty. It's not additional really, but it is part of the intellectual. What's the problem? But it is part of the intellectual, and that is a technological ability. But the technological ability in the man is something that isn't instinctive. All that is there is the innate ability. But with that ability, he can train himself, and it is determinative. That is, he chooses to do it and he chooses to develop it. And through that, and eventually, he is able to acquire it. But when he acquires that ability, he has it to a much greater degree than any animal has it. He can acquire it, but he can develop it, and develop it to a much greater degree than any animal has got it. We've got this, these are the qualities that after man sinned, he was able to do these things. But the thing was that he was able to develop them to a moderate degree very quickly. And that is something that went quickly. Now there are a couple of other things that we've got to understand about it all. The most important thing is that before the sin, the relationship of the body and the soul was a completely different one. And before I come to that, I just have to tell you about speech. Now, speech also, and of course, what I'm telling you is completely different from the way the secular world presents these matters to us. The secular world takes God completely out of all existence. Now, another important thing to understand is language. When man was born, he was born with language. He might not have known all the words, but the important thing is that he was able to, the words, he was born with a certain amount of words, and he could converse, he could understand. There were certain things which didn't have names, and he gave them names. He gave names to the animals. But he gave names to the animals through an ability to understand the exact nature of the animal, and through that he was able to give it its name. Now, there is something that we have to realize, and that is that the secular view is that everything evolved and everything developed from nothing. And the secular view of speech is, of language is, that dolphins also speak, and whales also speak, and animals also speak, and we've got to learn their language. Now, we don't believe in anything like that. What the only thing that an animal has is that he is able, what he is able to do is, he is able to make a sound to express a need or a desire. That he is able to do. That he can't make words and he can't make sentences. Now just look what is in human language. But before I tell you what is in human language, I want you to understand a very great difference between ancient languages and modern languages. The more modern a language is, the more simple it is. Dutch is more simple than German. Flemish is more simple than Dutch. The more modern a language, the simpler it is. Modern English is simpler than Chaucer English. Chaucer English is simpler than Anglo-Saxon. Hasn't got the cases. What they are doing with modern English, I think, is disastrous. That the people who speak modern English don't think it's disastrous. Now, to me, when I hear a person say, between he and I, we can do this. So they don't use the accusative at all. They use the nominative as nominative and accusative. As I can say a sentence like that, he can do it as well as her. When you're there, you wouldn't use the accusative, then you would use the nominative. But it doesn't exist in modern English. So what is happening in modern English, they are doing away the few case endings that we've got to live. They are gradually doing away with it. And this is accepted now. So we see that the more a language develops, the simpler it becomes. Should it really be like that? The more language develops, the more complicated it should become. Now take the very early languages, of which we've got a good idea. Take Latin and Greek, how complicated it is. How complicated the grammar, the accents, and the syntax is. Just look how complicated it is. Now, it should be the reverse. So the nearer we go to the source, the nearer, the more complicated it is. And why is it complicated? What makes it so complicated? What do you think? Yes?
The essence of what we're trying to communicate is something more complicated.
Well, that is more as far as the words and the phrases are concerned. But I want to know the form of the language. Why should it have case endings? Why should it have the declensions? Why should it have the conjugations, the voices? Why is that? And then the syntax of it.
Well, what
are case endings? It's not necessary for you to know. Because they don't exist anymore. They don't exist anymore, you see. The case ending is she and her. You say, she does this to she. You don't say that she does this to her. Why don't you say her, she does this to she? That has to do with the case in things. Now, what do you need it for? What do you need it for? And the first people, when they started speaking, is that the way they spoke? That's one of the most typical things in the old languages. Hebrew has got, in English, you've got a active and a passive voice. What else have you got? You've got a subjunctive mood, an imperative mood, but an active. Look what you've got in English. In Hebrew, you've got seven voices. Kal, Nifel, Pio, Pua, Yifil, Hopper, Inspire. All from you. Just look what you've got. Masculine and feminine, right? In modern language, no difference between masculine and feminine. And in modern Hebrew, they're trying to do away with the differences. Yes? So what is the reason for it?
Was it possible that the more complex the language, the more accurate the
word is? Exactly.
What we're doing,
the more it's got its accuracy, it has to be exactly as it is. That is reality. Language is an expression of reality, of something exactly as it is. Comfortable? So it's for that reason, it's for that reason that it's so completely accurate. Now, in Hebrew, I've told you, in Russian, I've told you, there are no exceptions. There's a reason for every change. Well, I believe that that must be the same in the old languages too, unless some changes come in to the language. But just look how complicated it all is. And it's complicated because it's the expression of reality, of that exactly as it is, it must be expressed. So the further we go away, we're not worried about reality. We are not worried about anything that is absolute. The more barbaric we are becoming, and the further away we go from civilizations, then the less there is of reality. Now, in the English language, you've got Shakespearean English, but the strange thing is that the Bible, the King James Version, which was done in 1611, was a standard translation of the Bible. And I must tell you that even by our standards, where the standard is Rosh HaKodesh, it's a wonderful translation. A wonderful translation. But it's called the authorized version of the Bible. Why is it called the authorized? It had authority. It was done by a large number of scholars. They were ecclesiastics. They were theologians. They were linguists. It was translated from the Greek into English, not from the Hebrew. But the Greek translation was done by us. The Septuagint was done by us about 350 years before the Common Era. That must be, that's 2,300 years ago. But we did it. So it's a very exact translation. It's the authorized version. Now, they've changed that. Because the world doesn't want any authority. Not really any authority. The world must be free. It's liberalism. No authority. So what it has done? New translations of the Bible. There was a revised version. Didn't matter very much. It was too much like the authorized version. Then they came the standard version. Don't want any kind of authority.
That's
not the one in big print, is it?
They have it in
big print. They're convinced that they're...
I don't know.
Now, you see what is happening. So the tendency is always away from reality. Because reality doesn't exist. There's nothing absolute. There's nothing like absolute law. There's a way from that. And that poor judge, what is his name? It's a poor book. That poor judge, he he was trying to tell these people, look here, there is such a thing as absolute rule. And as a judge, I must exercise my discretion within the framework of the absolute. Said, no such thing. That we're not prepared to have. That means an authority. That not. It's all relative. You see what has happened here? Everything is relative, away from authority. There mustn't be anything that is the yardstick. There mustn't be anything that is standard, because that is authority, and there can't be that. And that is why there can be no religion, because religion doesn't change. The whole idea of religion is it does not change with the time. That's the whole idea. You can't change Shabbos to Sunday. But the Reform said, if the majority wants it on Sunday, it's on Sunday. And so in 1912 in Chicago, they changed Shabbos to Sunday. That became the day of the address, because they wanted it so. So this is what the doing away of authority announced. And that has happened in everything. Happened even in language. So you can change it now, it just doesn't matter. Did someone want to ask a question? Yes.
I was wondering if Rob could give an example, just a simple sentence, of how this works in the work of how the complicated versus the less complicated, or the intricate versus the less intricate.
Good. I can take, you know, even English of the last century, if you take Macaulay's English and compare it with English today, take Macaulay's English and compare it with John Updike's numbers. Is he the person who writes numbers?
Mm-hmm.
Not he, who's the person who writes numbers? Mm-hmm. Are they pardon? I think he writes any verses. You know, if you take even English.
Well, why is it then, when I was saying that Berkeley the philosophy courses, and I was reading some of these philosophers, it was so hard for me to understand, is that because they're so far removed from reality?
Of course.
Because they're very precise.
They're very precise, like very precise. And it was short. It was short. If you take a language.
It takes you 3 hours to go through one page.
Exactly, it's very precise. Even a vision. A vision is very precise. I mean, we've got to have Achronim today to understand Rishonim. Can't do it otherwise. Everything is very precise, very exact. Don't have to say much. But if you take a little piece of Latin, a piece of one of Cicero's speeches, and you see, Hannah, how many ways are there in Latin to express a clause of purpose, an adverbial clause of purpose. I remember I worked out there were seven.
Okay, well.
I remember there were seven. The most usual one is ut plus the subjunctive.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? That's the most usual one. But you convert it with a supine, you convert it. You don't, grammar, they don't know what a supine is. Now I worked it out that there was once upon a time that there were seven ways of expressing an adverbial clause of purpose in Latin. For the adjective, in other words, supine, implicit subjunctive is the most usual one. Mm-hmm. Now you do a bit of Ciceronian prose, you've got all that there. Now, I believe that there was a reason that there were differences in all these certain ways of expressing it. It was not just a way you could choose whatever you like. I don't think we've got it, we probably have lost it. But that is the way they were able to express themselves. Yes?
And the regular person would understand it?
Well, if you study it, you understand it.
No, in this language.
Oh, they understood it, there's no question about it. Cicero spoke his own speeches.
They understood his speeches.
Well, otherwise, you know, it's not that much agreeing with me, not everybody's got to understand it.
he
could understand it. Because he spoke to the people, and they were able to understand it all. Otherwise, he could have spoken, but he spoke to the people. He made speeches and he defended people in courts, and they had to understand what he was saying. Of course, they understood it. The Hadrati said, you find it in language is a very good example of it all. We have got it. And then the first man said, man was created with language. Hashem gave him language from the very beginning. And this is reckoned, considered to be the greatest gift that God has given us. Because it's bound up with intellect, it's bound up with everything. Man is able to express himself in language. And you know, they want to teach a monkey to speak. And they think that if you can dress him up in clothes, and you can get him to smoke a cigar, that you're getting him to speak. Then you get a monkey to speak. A monkey is a monkey. You're going to get him to speak. There was one scientist, and I've got it somewhere, and I've mislaid the quotation. I have it in the original. And he had a point one day, who said that the difference between the highest form of animal and man is far greater than the difference of a protozoa and that animal. That is the difference between them. But that man today couldn't make that statement in public anymore. If he made it in public, he would be stoned to death. That is not the liberalist view. Can't have. You haven't got the right to have that opinion. So that is what it has come down to. So this is what man was born with. After the sin, then man had to exercise all this ability, and he had to use his bechira, free determination of will. This is what he wants to do, and he had to use his intellectual faculty, which had also in it the technological faculty, and he had to exercise that and be able to use it and so develop. Now, a big difference between the intellectual faculty and the technological faculty, although the technological faculty is part of the intellectual, the intellectual faculty, you can build something intellectually in a flash of a moment. Technologically, it can take hundreds of years. Develop it before man could build a skyscraper. But the idea of a skyscraper can have immediately. Intellectually, it goes in the flesh of the moment. And that is why the ancients, whether they were Jewish or non-Jewish, as far as the Chochmah was concerned, it was very great. Intellectually, it couldn't achieve that. Technologically, they couldn't achieve. They weren't able, they knew about the atom, but they couldn't split the atom. They couldn't harness the entire, but they knew about it. That is, knowing about it is intellectual, you can work it out. Splitting the atom, harnessing the power that's technological, that is, takes a long, long time. Now, after that, there is one more great difference between man before he sinned and after he sinned. Man before he sinned, in knowledge and wisdom, not in the question of good and evil, because that is a separate area altogether, but in knowledge, as far as wisdom and knowing, the main difference between Shekel, between Emes and Shekel, the difference between true and false, reality and illusion, about that there is no question at all. It is impossible for us to have any idea of the greatness of the first man in that. Why was that? Now, here comes a very interesting thing. When man was first created, that is the first man, the relationship of body and soul was not as it is now. The relationship of body and soul in the first man was where the body was there for the soul to make use of it when it needed it, to try and bring it down to our own everyday terms and understanding. If the man wanted to build a house, to make the plans for the house, he didn't need the body.
She didn't use the body.
When, however, he had to build the house, then he needed his body. Then he made use of his body. But when he was, for that which he needed his mind alone, no need of the body. Now, it's not quite the same of being able to take a hanger and hang the body up in the closet, and then immediately to put it down. He was, in it, he was created in that, but he didn't have to, when he used his mind, he didn't, the body wasn't there at all, he didn't need the body. So he didn't use the body at all. After the chet, there was the compound man. It wasn't now a body and a soul. But in every cell of the body there had to be the soul, otherwise the body couldn't function. And if every cell of the body there had to be the soul, then in the equivalent of every cell in the soul there had to be the body. And therefore man today is limited in his thinking, because he is always hindered by his body. So it comes, I'm dying. All of a sudden, I find myself thinking of something. What's happening here? Now, where did I lose track of it? So I have to ask forgiveness for my shame and go back to the time that I was concentrating, and now go forward. Why? Because the body is there all the time. But if it would have been possible, as was the case in man before the sin, that he didn't, when he was praying, he wasn't using his body, he never had that trouble of strange thoughts coming into him. Never happened. He didn't use his body because it was there. He, the body came with use only when he needed it, otherwise he didn't use it. Can you see the difference? And then the Gemara tells us that intellectually, the first man was when he was created, he temporarily had something. He could encompass anything. That is why the mind and the soul were unfettered by anything material or physical. And if it's unfettered by it, you know, when I used to go to high school, the way high school used to work, it started, I remember exactly the time, at 20 minutes to 9. Now, at 20 minutes to 9, the bell rang, and we had to be in line. 2 minutes afterwards, a master came out, you know, we weren't sisters, wasn't boys and girls together, no teachers. We were only boys and only masters. At 2 minutes later, there was a master at the top of the line, and you marched in. Heaven helped you, because that's the only chance you had. If you came into line and the master was already there, then you knew you couldn't join the line, you had to stand at the back. And he waited. And then when everybody was in and you walked in, what happened? Had to give an explanation. And it was a very serious misdemeanor to be late. You can imagine that to a person like myself, that caused nightmares. So, what were my nightmares? I dreamt that I was late. And I'm running to school, and the bell is ringing. Now, I had to travel by bicycle, and there was a big clock tower at the school, there was a clock, and I used to go, when I reached in time, and then I used to go down, where I could see the time, you see. And I knew that if it was 23 minutes to 9, I'm in time. If it's 22 minutes to 9, I've got to rush. If it's 21 minutes to 9, I may not make it. And I think that I'm there, and as I come into the gate of the school, I hear the bell ring. Now, where did that night first start? And I'm awakened by the alarm clock, you see. So alarm clock is the day that I hear it. So when did that dream start, that nightmare? And I'm rushing up the hill and begging for all I'm worth. It started from the moment it began to ring. And when did I wake up? When it began to ring. So in that still short space of time, I could have that nightmare. How can one think so quickly? In a dream, it happens very quickly. Then you are unsettled by physical, by the body. If you want to know how unsettled you are by the body, have a nightmare. I'm sorry, I'm going to give you nightmares, but you have a nightmare. Have a nightmare that you've tramped on a rattlesnake and you are running. How fast can you run in your sleep? You can't move your legs. Why can't you move your legs?
Because there's no body in
there. Your body and your mind are separated. And that is what Chazal says, that sleep is 1/60th of death. They mean that that is the degree to which the mind of the soul is separated to from the body. 1/60th of what it is in lifetime. So now you can have an idea, and that is what it was before. As soon as man was sin, then there was man compounded, body and soul. And now it is one. That is man. Those are the differences between man before he sinned and after he sinned. Yes, that is.
Okay, for example, the soul within the body the whole time.
Yes, I just give that as a caricature sort of thing that he takes it off. That's only
figurative.
So I'm not sure. Magic is there, but he could, if he didn't need it, he didn't use it. You follow? I mean, you know, this is a strange thing. Those who sue the Rail about the Kim Machre in the Chem, I share a Kim Zeni Machre. Don't turn after your heart and after your eyes. Not turn after your eyes when there's something that you mustn't see, you close your eyes. So when you open your eyes, you need them. If you hear you can't do it. Very more difficult, you know, to close your eyes. But you can do it, but it's very more difficult. Achareinu b'avachem, inclination. It's there. Passions are there. Desires are there. Very difficult. You can't turn that off. That's an expression I learned in California. You can't just turn it off. That the first man was able to do it. It's not that he was able to do it that way. You use the body when you need the body when you use it. And when I'm sitting and working at my desk, I don't use my legs. Don't use it. All of a sudden, I've got to look up something. Then I use my legs because I need it then. But when I'm working, I'm not using it. So they didn't use that to them. That is the first man. Great differences. Yes, Sheila.
Question about the senses. When prior to the hearing is the only sense that it's so hard to block it out. The eyes you can close, the nose you can close, the mouth you can close, but the ears, almost impossible to completely block sound out of the ears.
The hearing is the most sensitive of all the senses. Hearing is the most sensitive. The more sensitive, the more difficult it is to. The more ruchnias, the more difficult it is to block out. The more ruchnias, the more difficult it is to block out. All right, now, I've just given you a little more background to it all to help us to understand what it is that you are reading. Unless you wanted to be like the women who wanted to join the shir, and I wondered, now, how am I going to get out of this one? And she said, what are you studying? And I said, Berach Hashem. She said, oh, by Yitzhak. I said, exactly. She said, well, I've done that already. You fine. Then you don't have to come. Thank you. That's all right. All right. Now, let us go pages 52 and 53. Paragraphs, Yudalef on 52 and 11 on 53. Now, I must tell you that my wife has a criticism of me in the Shi'urim. And what she says is that to me it is all so simple that I have no idea of how difficult it is for you. And when I complain that you tell me you're confused, so it's such a difficult subject and it is so compressed into so little. So I'm trying to give you the background so it's easier to understand. The omnom via yoshe nigzru ha misu alo odem chamoshe zocharnu the nintzo she ha murkova ze tzorik she hi pored lizmon mo. So he says, and now, since it has been decreed that man must die, as we mentioned, and we discussed the reason for it, you weren't here for that, Shira. And we discussed the reason for it. The nintzo she ha murkova ze tzorik she hi pored lizmon mo. And now, this murko, that this man that is now a compound of body and soul, it is necessary that this compound must be separated for a certain length of time. And after that, it will again be joined together. Body and soul will be joined together. He may. Therefore, during this time of separation, there must be a place in the world, in the universe, for these two separate entities. And the place for each entity must be one that is opposite to its nature. It's just a wonderful thing here. And therefore it is necessary for the body to return to its elemental situation. As I explained to you, the only way one can be betahir klei cheres is through dismantling, complete dismantling and breaking up. Therefore b'nei aguf tzorich sheyarzo l'sedev, the body must return to its elemental situation, and therefore, in accordance with the law of Taharas Klecheres, it must decompose and completely disintegrate the Huil the Hoyo Mino offer, and since from what is it made? Thus, so, for it to return to its elemental situation, it must return to dust. Now, Behu Mashi Omer is Baruch Shemola Odom, and that is what Hashem said to man, Ki Ofor Ato Bel Ofor Toshu. When man received the curse, it was, you are dust, and unto dust shall you return. That's what, in the Torah we are told, that is what he said to man. But the soul that has merits in its deeds, the soul has to wait until that be done to the body which is necessary for it to be done to it. That is, that the body must completely decompose and disintegrate. And until then, the soul cannot return into the body. That is with the resurrection of the dead, that is clear as amazing. Until then, so it has to wait until the time is ready for it. Dehainu ha-hatocho va-hefsei borishono. That it means, first of all, it must be the complete decomposition of the body. That's the first thing that's got to take place. Ve-ha-hesh-eir be-ofor kovz hazman. And it's got to remain in dust as long as it is necessary for it to remain in dust. But there are two matters here. First of all, it's got to be in the dust until there is a complete decomposition, disintegration. That is one thing. And then it's got to be there until the time is decreed for the Kriyas HaMaaseh. So it is possible that the soul is ready to return into the body, and the body is so decomposed
that it is ready to be rebuilt from the soul, but it hasn't happened yet because the time hasn't come. That will only come for Tchias HaMaseh. So there's got to be a situation in the world before that can take place. That is, in Hashem's own good time, that is when it takes place. But as we discuss, that according to the way we are understanding it, Moshiach comes before Tchias HaMaseh. And that is also the Rambam's view. Now, and it's to remain in the earth all the bonus mechodesh achaka, and after that it is to be rebuilt anew. That it means that its elements are to be retrieved from out of the earth and the atmosphere, and it's to be rebuilt. So that the soul should be able to return into it.
That means some people will have waited 1,000 years and some people 5 days.
Yes, you see, it's really not a correct way. You're absolutely right, but it's not altogether to be correct, because here we come into an unknown area. Time is only here. And the element isn't that. So the time, our idea of time is somehow it's not the same. And there is another, I just want to see if I can lay my hands on a verse in Ecclesiastes. Now, just let us just finish this little bit, and then I'll be able to point this out to you. Body has got to have its place where it can decompose completely. And where is its place? Its place is in the earth, because that is from where it comes. So that is its place. During the interim period between death and resurrection, that is its place. That is its natural place. The Omnom Sori Shiyelo Mokum Bain Kochu Bain Koch, Unum Natsuran Se Huchan Ulam Anashomas. He said, but as far as the soul is concerned, from the time of death until the time of resurrection, the soul must also have a place where it can be. So where's the natural place for the soul to be? In heaven. That's from where it comes. So that is the place where the soul is. Now look what Shlomo HaMelech says. At the end of the Kohelis Ecclesiastes, he says, and the Yoshev Heofor Alo Ores Keshehoyo, the Horuach Toshuv El Elohim Asher Nisono, and the dust returneth to the earth as it was, and the spirit unto Hashem who gave it. That is what it means. When Shlomo HaMelech says it, but Yoshuvot, this is man, and the dust returneth to the dust in man, returneth to the earth as it was, and the spirit returneth unto God who gave it. Now, the secularists and the secularists in Judaism have no doubt about that, which causes a lot of pain. The secularist says Jews don't believe in afterlife. Resurrection is occurring. But they don't even believe that the soul is indestructible and the soul goes on living. Where does it say so in the Bible? But it says so explicitly, not implicitly. And the soul returneth to God who gave it. The Yoshev, the soul returneth, but the Ruach Toshu, and the spirit returneth, El Elohim Hashem Asino who gave it. Say, no, that was put afterwards through Greek influence, that was put in afterwards. That is the way it's explained. Now, that is secularism in religion. That is tendentiousness. What you can do in order to make your case. But here it is explicit, yes?
What happens if the body is not allowed to decompose? For example, somebody's put into
Even the obvious thing is it can't be purified. so there can't be any resurrection.
Ever.
Until it's decomposed, you know. I don't
so
need
for
to
the
do
Jews
ever.
That are buried in here improperly because they don't know better, that means...
No, it doesn't mean, no. They can be buried improperly, but there's decomposition. Can
people
be buried...
buried in mausoleum.
Well, I don't know what a mausoleum is. What exactly
like
is it?
They go into a vault, which is like, I guess, made out of marble.
Well, you can be made out of marble also decomposes. I thought you were referring to something like Walt Disney, where they put him into cold storage.
No. And the other question would be if somebody was in a, like, for example, a metal box as opposed to being in wood. Is it,
well, we don't like that.
It
takes longer, but the decomposition takes place.
So for some reason, decomposition didn't take place.
Well, then it can't be purified. Mm-hmm. It can't be purified. Or the mummy, then it can't be purified. It's just the same as you have, you weren't here for that, where you have a kli tome, a kli cheres tome. What can you do with it?
Yeah,
and you're going to keep it. I don't know what happens there, you see. Yes?
We find bones that are thousands of years old of people that have been buried in the ground
yes.
without baskets or anything else.
Yes.
Does this mean
I don't know if they exist for thousands of years. I don't know.
Well, they can be up to 5,000 years.
I don't know. You see, I haven't had any experience in that. I don't know of human bones. I know human bones that can be a couple of hundred years old, that I do know. How old is Mrs. Stress? I beg your pardon, you know who Mrs. Press was?
No.
This is one of the skeletons, early skeletons that they found. But from South Africa, yes. And there's a lot of conjecture about it. Professor Darton and Professor Tobias. And just to tell you that Professor, I knew Professor Dart, and although he was an evolutionist, he had a great affection for me. And I know Professor Tobias. Professor Dart was a lot older than I am. He died only a few months ago. It was over 100 of people. Something like that. Professor Tobias is a younger person than I am. And of course, these are both great evolutionists. And as I say, Dart was a much older man than I. But he was very fond of me because of something that happened. To one of his students, he gave an argument to me. And I gave the answer, and the student brought it back to him. He was very pleased with it. He was very pleased with the answer. He couldn't do anything with it, so he was very pleased with it. So, and Professor Tobias, I knew really long after that, and he used to visit our home very often. Every Pesach, he was with us, didn't he? Yes. But these were evolutionists. The only thing, since I left South Africa, Professor Tobias has become more of an evolutionist than he was. Any cause and effect in that, I can't tell you. Now, the Omnom Tzorishe, Yer Yer Lo Mokum Bein Koch U Bein Koch, but it's necessary for the soul also to have a place in the interim, but Ulam the Tzorich Ze Huchen Olam Anashonis, and for that there is the world of souls. Shevoti kon naso aneshomas azakas acharei teison min haguf, they will enter the pure souls after they leave the body. Now he uses the word azakos. I'm going to translate that. And they will enter the purified souls after they leave the body. And by that I mean that the soul also has to go a degree of purging, which it does, and after that, it goes into the world of the souls. I don't think that is evident in the English. V'sishkono shom b'makom menucho, and there it will rest in peace. Kol zman yizgalgel al haguf adini mor uyim yizgalgel lo. During all that time that the body must go through that process which it is necessary to go through. Now, that brought up the question of the bones, and my wife brought up the question that there was an inequity about it all. Is that right? Because, yes, yes. Now, it's possible that there is the period of complete disintegration takes place at a time when all takes place together, and that is where the bones also decompose. That is possible. But I can't, again, there I'm surmising. It's just an explanation I can give you. If that is indeed the case, then that is possible that there's a final stage of disintegration, and that Hashem sees to that. Yes, Shira?
Sorry, I have a question for you, but I just want to get it clear that when the soul separates from the body, mm-hmm. the body is not necessarily completely decomposed.
When the soul separates from the body?
When a person's died,
not at all. Yes, not at all.
The soul is
separated.
The soul is separated.
That's it, but not in it. It's not in the body. It's not in the body. No. It's not in the body.
But
there's a difficult. It goes straight back into the body. Yes.
Is that the 11th month period?
And that is the period of purging. So we say, which is, that is the thing that is relative, because on the overall MS, it isn't a question of time, it's a different concept altogether. But that we take it to be, we say that we say Kaddish for a person only 11 months and not 12 months. Because we say the maximum period of purging, is that the correct word?
Mm-hmm.
They use it here also?
Yes.
The maximum period of purging is 12 months.
Yes.
We're going to see after.
No,
it's 12 months. The maximum period of purging is 12 months. Unless it's a person for whom there's no hope at all. That it's so bad that there's not going to be any resurrection. That's a different story. But the natural period, the maximum period, is 12 months. So for whom would it be 12 months?
For a bad
person, for the Russia. It's 12 months. Now, nobody wants to stamp a parent as a Rosha. So, the law is you're not allowed to do. So, the law is for the parents is only 11 months, let's say, Kaddish. But mourning is for 12 months. But the actual is only for 11 months.
But that's for the purging of the soul.
That is for the purging of the soul, yes.
And then from there, they go to...
They're on the Olam HaNeshamas. Then they are in the world of souls. And the world of souls is where souls are until, but he'll explain something which is very important and which I shouldn't do tonight. But you'll have such nightmares if I don't finish it tonight, so I just have to do it. Yes, Sima?
If you are going through the process of purification of the soul,
he does that in the second part, he touches on that. I'm saying, but that we've got from other stories, we've got that from the Rambam, we've got that from other stories, but a little bit in the Rambam we've got, but that we've got from other stories, yes?
Why is cremation such a terrible thing? What is it? Because the body still deteriorates.
Because the law is that it returns from whence it came. And this is not returning from whence it came. Not returning whence it came. Not the same thing. Betty?
I'm curious about the soul is only cured by the body. And if the soul is... The person is on them, such a McGregor, that the soul is able to purify the body decomposes totally anyhow. What is it?
No, the only cases we've got of it is the case of Eliyahu HaNavi.
So for Tzaddikim, the soul is not able at all to purify the body?
No, not even a person like Eliyahu HaNavi, there it happened.
Only for these handful of people who didn't die at all.
That's all. That means that they didn't die at all. It means that the soul purified the body.
So for the rest of humanity,
yes.
There's no ability at all for the soul to perform. There's no degrees in this, in other words.
Well, you see, what you've done, you are trying to put me into, unconsciously, you're trying to put me into a situation of contradiction. On the one hand, you make me say that there were cases where it was done.
No.
On the other one, you say you want to say that the person hasn't got the ability to do it. If he hasn't got the ability to do it, then how is it that Eliyahu did it? If he hasn't got the ability to do it, then how is it that we can't do it? You follow? You're putting me into a position of contradiction,
yeah.
Which I don't like. To put, no, not that I don't like it about myself, I don't like to contradict myself if I can possibly help it.
It's striking that there are no degrees in this process. You can do it all.
There are very many degrees, of course. There are very many degrees in it. Oh, that isn't right. Oh, there are certain degrees in it. Oh, yes. has seen any of your
Yes. I asked the Rav a question one time. I'm not sure of the answer, but this is related to that question. If the souls were made by Hashem before they entered the body, like they all, supposedly all the souls were at Mount Sinai.
Yes.
If so, if all these souls were made before they entered the body and at that time, then when the soul dies and it goes back to this soul world, that's what I hear. Are all those souls there, the unborn ones and the ones that came back from the body, or would they be in a separate place?
No, only souls that are waiting to return into the body. Only that. Now, the next paragraph, is till segment 12, I want to do with you. We make kolas manahu tishkona neshomasahim the malo uvesadu. And all that time, the souls are in a situation of pleasure. May ein mashi noshem ahem achakach bizmanach buru amiti shezochah melevolo. After the like of that pleasure that they will have when the true reward comes to them. When does the true reward come to them? It is like that, not the same, but it is after that. You follow? You must understand it's after that. I'm very much like a millionaire because I've got $231 in the bank. By my last balance, $231 in the bank. But the millionaire's got $3 million in the bank. Yes, but 231 is a percentage of 3 million. So I'm a percentage of a millionaire. So this is also a percentage. This is a what he says. It is something of that pleasure, a percentage of what he's going to have. You follow? Something like it, it's in the falls into the same category. Because even his stature in the world of souls is certainly measured also according to the deeds that he did here. Not everybody is the same there. And the enjoyment that he has is not the same. It's a spiritual enjoyment. It's the enjoyment that each one has is different. And when the true reward comes afterwards, after the resurrection, not everyone has the same amount. So the people who are resurrected, they are different types of people, as they are today. The true perfection to which the soul is destined can only be reached but not singly by body or soul, can only be reached by body and soul together. Roz, I'm afraid you lifted this last week, didn't you? And a couple of weeks before that, you must find this very confusing. Not? All right. Then it's to your credit, not mine. That is as far as we take it today. Now, do you find this very difficult? Still very difficult.
Overwhelming.
Still.
Overwhelming.
Is it still?
It's very realistic.
And I think it's so very, very simple.
Now, did Arya Kaplan have this ability of this writing, this perception of this clarity and this simplicity in his writing? Arya Kaplan, would he translate?
Well, I'm not using the translation. It's only occasionally when I come across a word that I can't think of a suitable English word. It's only then that I look. Sometimes I find it, sometimes I don't. But I don't know his translation. I don't know. Yes, Lisa.
I'm sorry, sir, but a couple of pages ago, I didn't want to interrupt you, but when he refers to the fact of the destruction and the resurrection, and then he says, and then the world will start all over again, renewed.
Yes.
that's Zappa's interpretation, or is that what Hashem has promised?
Now, you see, you're asking me a question that I'd like you to ask me next time. And then I'll explain, because that needs a lot of explanation. Now, just remember your question. Is this Lutzaten's idea, or is this exactly as it is?
Well, as it's come down.
Yes, we've actually, he's dealt with this, but I don't expect you to remember it. But once you ask the question and I point it out to you, then you will remember it. Is the next Wednesday the 30th?
Yeah,
in the 29th.
Yeah.
29th?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. I would very much like to finish this chapter next week. But as I say, I think that I've made it so clear that you can't help understanding it. Just all very simple. But please remember this verse in there. And the dust returneth to the earth as it was, but the spirit shall return unto God who gave it. And the idea is, each one has to have its place. So for the interim period, the natural place of the body is from where it comes. The natural place for the soul is from where it comes. And that's the way it works. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you.